Well, hey there, Gateway Mark Pomeroy, coming at you once again from the great nation of Westralia. Good to be back. Hey, a few weeks ago, Monday morning, I woke up and noticed on my phone I had 3 text messages, which is kind of a lot for the beginning of a day. And I opened the first one, saw that it was a friendly reminder from a company that I needed to click the link and pay an extra $2.50 for a package that was coming my way or else it wouldn't be delivered. Okay. Went to the second text message, another friendly reminder from a company that I needed to click the link and update my address details or else the package that I delivered wouldn't arrive at the correct address. Then the third message, I opened that up and another friendly company letting me know that I needed to click the link and pay my toll charge that was overdue. Okay, so that was Monday. Tuesday, I woke up, another friendly text message was awaiting me, which was another reminder that if I clicked this particular link and paid $2.50, the package that I ordered would arrive. Wednesday, I received this email, incredible generosity displayed. A woman who was advising me she'd recently lost her husband and that if I sent her my full address details, she would ship me her late husband's grand piano. No questions asked, no strings attached. Woo-hoo! Well, obviously these were scams, yes. And I know these were scams because firstly, I hadn't ordered a package. So the idea of paying extra or changing my address details was unnecessary. Secondly, with the toll one, firstly, I don't own a car. And secondly, sorry for those of you joining from Melbourne, here in P-Town, we don't have toll roads. So there's that. And then the widow offering me her late husband's grand piano. Well, this is the 6th time he's died in the last 4 years. And I know this because she's contacted me 6 times in the last 4 years with this incredibly generous offer of her late husband's grand piano. All right. Scams aren't new. I know that. They've been going on for quite some time. In fact, some intrepid Canadian journalist recently came across this: $43 million in cash found in an empty Nigerian apartment. Sound familiar? Well, yeah, poor guy. Probably spent the past decade trying to share it, but nobody ever replied to his email, including me. But scams, whilst they're not new, they are absolutely on the rise. In fact, last month, there was the first ever global fraud summit held in London where ministers from developed nations all around the world gathered to try and solve this growing crime. And the thing with scams is, you know, we know that people are trying to maybe steal some money from your bank account, but the biggest problem and the biggest threat isn't stealing money, it's actually stealing your identity, what's known as identity theft. And I use this metaphor because I'm convinced that the person or the being that's had their identity co-opted or stolen more than anybody in human history is God himself. Let me test that with you for a moment. Let's have a little thought experiment. You don't need to say anything out loud, but just in your head, try and think of how you would describe God in just a few words. Not a few sentences, just a few words. Pick a few words. Now, if you're super positive about who God is, you might pick words like love, which is the one that gets you the gold star in kids ministry. Maybe just, God is just. Okay, great. That's a very positive word to describe God. Maybe some of you might use words that are somewhere in the middle. You know, God's distant. God's indifferent. Some of you, or maybe people in your sphere, might continue down this scale and end up using maybe words that are a lot more negative. You know, perception of God is that he's angry and he's vengeful. Well, if you have your ID stolen, you're going to need to try and prove your real identity. And what I love is that God himself actually proved his identity. He actually described who he is in just a few words. It's a bit like the prophet Joe Jonas recently said. There was a scandal going on in the media about him, and he said, "Listen, if it doesn't come from my mouth, don't believe it." So rather than guess who God is or speculate what he's like, we have the opportunity to read God describing himself in his own words. Now, the context is this. The nation of Israel had been held by the Egyptians in captivity as slaves for around 400 years. And God, who had chosen the nation of Israel to be his people, decided it was time for them to get out of Egypt and actually ultimately make their way to inherit and inhabit a land that he promised them. So God taps a guy named Moses and says, "I want you to be the leader. I want you to be the one that to confront Pharaoh, say, 'Let my people go.' And then I want you to lead the people out of Egypt into the promised land." This was a big gig. It's not one that Moses signed up for. He didn't volunteer. He wasn't really qualified. Ultimately, in fact, he would be charged with the responsibility of not just confronting Pharaoh, but then leading somewhere between 1 and 2 million people from Egypt into the promised land, some of whom, in fact, many of whom, were a bunch of whingers. Yeah, who wants that gig? So anyway, Moses is like, "Okay, God, I'll do it. But in order for me to do what it is you want me to do, I need to know who you actually are. And then, if I know who you are, I'm going to be more confident and more clear in what it is you've called me to do." Up to that point, God had never revealed who he was. And yet, for some bonkers reason, he actually answered Moses' prayer. And this is how he described himself. "I'm the Lord, the God of compassion and mercy. I'm slow to anger and filled with unfailing love and faithfulness." Now, this isn't a flyover verse in the Bible. This is found early on, but it's repeated over 20 more times as we read through God's word. In fact, it's the most re-quoted scripture in the entire remainder of scripture. It's literally the fact that God wanted us to get it, so much so that he kept on double-clicking and double-clicking and double-clicking and double-clicking over 20 times. And man, this list, these five things, what a list. Compassion, mercy, slow to anger, unfailing love, faithfulness. I read that list and I'll be like, I'll be happy if just one of those is true. But wow, if all five are true, hello. So we don't have time to go into all five of them today. I just want to drill into the first one. Let's us start with the one that God started with. "I'm a God of compassion." Now, this word compassion also translates or is closely related to a mother's womb. The very practical inference is that God is trying to let us know that he is fiercely protective of the object of his affection, which is you and me. Recently heard a story of a group of guys, high school guys, playing a game of pickup basketball, outdoor court, concrete, you know, pretty standard stuff. And there were, you know, just two teams or two, you know, they broke it up into two teams. And in these two teams were two brothers. The older brother was on one team and the younger brother was on the other team. And it's as if the older brother had a PhD in trash talk. I mean, when you're playing pickup basketball, trash talk, it's kind of de rigueur. But this older brother, he was like, he took it to the extreme. Like he was mean and he directed most of his trash talking to his younger brother. Well, this game of pickup basketball is going on when, kind of out of nowhere, the younger brother just froze and slumped and then fell onto the court surface. And the older brother moved quickly over to his younger brother and picked up his head and started cradling his head with incredible compassion. And then he looked up to the other teenagers gather around, said, "Look, my brother's having an epileptic episode." None of them had seen anyone having an epileptic episode before. And so the older brother said to them, "Listen, he's going to come to in a few moments. And I just think it would be really better if you guys weren't standing around. So maybe you just go to the other end of the court and just kind of shoot around." And right there was an imperfect expression of compassion. And the biggest truth, in fact, maybe like the only truth I want us to take away today is that God has compassion for you. Not anger, not indifference, not vengefulness, but compassion. Again, this idea that compassion is very closely linked to the same word as a mother's womb, that God is fiercely protective of the object of his affection, which is you. So later on, God spoke through a spokesperson. You know, in church world, we call them a prophet. A guy named Isaiah, and this is what God said through Isaiah. "Can a woman forget her nursing child, that she would have no compassion on the son of her womb?" Kind of a rhetorical question, like as if that would happen. Okay, it happens. Not often, thankfully, and it shouldn't. But for the most part, this doesn't happen. A woman forgetting her nursing child, having no compassion for the son of her womb. And God said, "Look, even if that happens, even these may forget, yet I will not forget you." Again, God reminding us that he's fiercely protective of the object of his affection, which is you and me. Now, I'm about to speak about something that's way outside my lane, okay? Full disclosure. Fact is, I have never given birth to a baby. So I don't really have the qualifications to say what I'm about to say, but, you know, and if you're a mom, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is my basic understanding. It's 2 a.m. and your four-month-old baby is hungry. Chances are Junior doesn't stop in that moment of hunger pangs and say to himself, "You know what? I couldn't help noticing that Mom was a bit tired today. She really, really needs her sleep. And I've heard about this thing called intermittent fasting, so maybe I'll give that a go. And, you know, just wait, let Mom sleep in. And then when her body clock wakes her up, she can come in and give me my first meal of the day." Well, look, I'm pretty sure that's not how things go. You know, when your baby's hungry and crying in the middle of the night, even if you're tired, mom or dad, good on you, dad, you'll go in and you'll feed Junior because of your love and compassion. And as if that's not good enough news, which it is, but if that's not good enough news and a great reminder of God's compassion for us, mom or dad, again, hopefully, ideally, don't walk into Junior's room when 2 a.m. Junior's crying, feed me, feed me, and say, listen, Junior, all day long, all you've done is sleep and cry and eat and poo. You have contributed nothing to this household. You've done absolutely nothing to deserve this meal. No. You actually give Junior something that he or she hasn't actually earned. You know, and this is another reminder that not only is God fiercely protective of the object of his affection, which is you and me, it's also a reminder that God doesn't give us what we deserve, that he actually, motivated by compassion, always desires and moves towards giving us better than what we deserve based on the value that he places on us, not on what we can earn from him. All right, so okay, I'm not a mom. Some of you aren't moms. You're like, oh, I don't quite understand this metaphor. God wrote, inspired the psalmist to write this, as a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear or respect him. The compassion of a father. This is expressed when, you know, you're at Junior's sports game and Junior misses the goal that would have caused their team to win the final. And when you get in the car and you drive home and you sense that Junior's feeling pretty terrible, you stop for ice cream. It's the sort of action that when your daughter presents the report card and she's in tears because she didn't get the mark that she had worked so hard to get in the exam, that you say to her, sweetheart, you are worth far more than any score on a report card. Those of you who are fathers of kiddos who are sort of only been driving for a few years, you might want to just hold on to your toupees for this one. It's compassion when newish driving son phones you at 1 a.m. and says, Dad, Freddie got some bad news. I've been in a car accident. And compassion causes you to say, are you okay? Instead of, is the car okay? See, God acts towards us, not based on what we deserve, but on the value he places on us and wants to give us more than we deserve. You know, Jesus unpacked this in one of the many stories he told. This one's kind of one of the more famous ones. We call it the prodigal son, but there's a lot we can learn, not so much just from the prodigal son or the runaway son. We can learn a lot from the father. So here's the story. And if you're a church veteran, you know the story. Yeah, I know how the story ends, Marco. Get on with it. Listen, I'm praying that God will just show you something more and something new. And if you don't know the story, well, here it is. So there's a dad, landowner, seemingly quite well off. He had two sons, and the youngest of the two sons came to him very rudely while he was still alive and asked his dad to give him his share of the inheritance. incredibly affronting question. And I don't know why, but for some reason, the dad actually gave the son, the youngest son, his share of the inheritance, and off he went. The youngest son went off partying like it was 1999. And not only did he burn through the entire inheritance, he was doing stuff that was tarnishing and sullying the family reputation. You know, he didn't lose the inheritance by betting on cryptocurrency. He lost it by some pretty wild living, which I'm pretty sure in that culture, the stories would have been filtering back to the dad. Oh, we saw your son the other week. Guess what he was up to? So the younger son's burnt through everything. Literally, and this was a Jewish boy, found himself eating the same food that the pigs in the area were eating. And Jewish people wouldn't even go near pigs, let alone eat the same food. This is literally when Jesus said he kind of hit rock bottom. And he came to his senses. And he came up with a plan. The plan was that he was going to go back to his dad and say to his dad, look, I'm not worthy to be called your son. Look what I've done. I've taken the inheritance. I've burnt through it. I've tarnished and sullied the family reputation. So I'm not even asking to be reinstated as your son. I'll just be happy to be out with the servants because they're eating better than I'm currently eating right now. And so he kind of rehearsed this speech and started on his way back to his father. No doubt, just replaying this speech, knowing he's just got one shot at this. He's got to get it right. I'm not worthy to be called your son. Please. And Jesus says that the father, soon after, noticed this younger son coming over the horizon. And the father started running towards the youngest son. Now, this is a very easy to miss opportunity if you know how the story ends. If you don't know how the story ends, put yourself in the position of the youngest son. The youngest son knows everything rotten that he's done. And now he sees his dad running towards him. If this was a Hollywood blockbuster, what theme music would be playing right now? Is it going to be Taylor Swift's Love Story or Chariots of Fire? Or is it going to be the Jaws theme music? And I just wonder if, for a moment, the younger son might have actually been hearing the Jaws theme music, and if he was, thinking, uh-oh, changed his mind, turned 180, and ran, tried to outrun his dad. Well, it seems the young son knew something about the nature and the character of his dad that as he saw his dad running towards him, he kept moving towards his father. And Jesus revealed the fuel of the father, filled with love and compassion. The father ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. A reminder that God, fueled by his compassionate nature, is fiercely protective of the object of his affection, and that's you and that's me. And fueled by compassion, he wants to give us better than we deserve.